The Cozy Earth Mother's Day Sale is here. Their incredible bedding and loungewear is mind-blowingly satisfying to touch, and it is sourced from bamboo, and it's good for the planet, free from toxins, it gets softer with every single wash, and it's naturally temperature regulating. My mum approves, and yours will too. Listeners get 35% off any order at cozyearth.com using code GROWTH.
For one thing to go right, 100 things had to go wrong first. And if one thing went right without 100 things going wrong, we were like, oh my God, what's going to go wrong? What's going to happen?
Hello and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast, the inspiration station where there are no leprechauns, there are only leprechauns. Today, I am overjoyed to be inviting Ekki Newton onto the podcast. She is capital D lightful. And her story is just increíble without a D.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Yeah, you might regret saying that. Now, Ekki runs Karma Kitchen and Karma Cans. Karma Cans is a catering company supplying ethical and healthy food for corporates and events. And Karma Kitchen provides professional standard commercial food kitchens to any food business. And these businesses have raised an eye-watering £350 million, which, depending on the exchange rate, is like $500 million. And I'm sure it was not easy. I myself have run several businesses and been through hell and back to get to raising any kind of money from a VC. And I'd hate to add to the public message out there that you can just start a business and hey presto, your bank account's gonna explode to the moon. It's not how it goes. And I know that you, Ekki, have had a really insane set of experiences to get to where you're at now. And I'd like to frame this conversation with the difficulties and the time it takes to get anywhere on the path of the journey to success that we kind of aspire to.
I like to call it the trough of sadness. It's like people have an idea in their mind of how long they think that something is going to take before it works and is successful. And the reality is that it's doubled or maybe even triple to get what you wanted or even on the path to what you wanted it to be. And that mismatch in expectations, not just from the actual person who's doing the thing, but also from all the other people looking on around them. That is what I call the trough of sadness. So, you know, you start a company, all your friends and family are super invested in it. They're interested and engaged. And then the company starts, you get some early press and it's very interesting. And then as you get kind of 1.5 to 2 years into a project, the initial kind of, ooh, like amazing, everything's going so well, that tends to kind of die down a little bit. And before it often dies down just before your actual customers start liking your product or whatever you're making or selling starts to gain any real traction. That's the hardest place to get through. But I always find like if you kind of get through that moment, even if what you end up with isn't what you started with, you'll have something at the end of it that's worth fighting for. And it's certainly true. Like, I mean, Karma Cans went through so much in the first probably 3 years that when the pandemic hit and we're a corporate catering company, where we lost 96% of our revenue in a week. We went through so much in the first 3 years that no one even panicked when the pandemic hit.
Nice.
That's when you know that it's like things were so bad at that point that at the end of it, even a global pandemic where you're losing everything in just a few weeks, it doesn't even faze you. You're just like, oh,
cool.
Of course, the global pandemic.
That sounds intense. Can you paint a picture a bit more of like, give me an example of some of the intense, difficult things that went wrong in the first 3 years, please?
Oh my God, what did it go wrong? I think it would be easier for me to just paint you a very short picture of the things that went right. Because basically, me and Jeannie used to say to each other that for one thing to go right, 100 things had to go wrong first. And if one thing went right without 100 things going wrong, yeah, we were like, oh my God, what's going to go wrong next? You know, what's going to happen next? I mean, it was just everything. It was just very hard at the beginning. You know, we were really young. I was 23. She was 21. We really didn't know very much about business. We hadn't really worked for ourselves before. We hadn't done things like it. I mean, we didn't even send an invoice in the first 6 months of trading. We barely got paid. We didn't price right. We changed the menu every single day, which for a team of two was a really interesting choice, I'd say. I think every business book is like, you have to know your product. You have to sell just your product and a range of products. We were so desperate for money. We just took any job. We'd make any kind of food. There was this one day where someone asked us if we would make 50 pies and deliver them. And we did all of our deliveries by bike ourselves. So we basically made these 50 pies and we'd never really made pies before. And it just went so wrong. Jeannie's left-handed. She couldn't use the masher. I think at one point she was just standing over the sink, mashing potatoes, crying. And I think her knuckles were bleeding. And she was just like, this is the worst day of my life. And at that time, we were sharing a kitchen with a nightclub in Soho, the Phoenix Artist Club. They were renting their kitchen space to us in the morning time. And then it was a nightclub in the evening. So we had to be out by 2. We were over time. It was probably 3:30. Their chefs were coming in to start prep for their shift. And Jeannie was just, you know, Jeannie was crying over the mashed potato in the sink. I was trying to pack these pies that were leaking everywhere into a bike. And we finally got it out. It was an hour and a half late. I was personally cycling them there. I was crying by the time I arrived. I could smell the pie juice. I could smell the filling of the pies in the bike, which was always a bad sign. It means that something has leaked in the bike. I got there. It was a mess. They were all leaking everywhere. It was a complete disaster. And I got there and I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry your pies are late. And they just didn't even care. They were just kind of drunk. And I was like, why have we done this to ourselves? These people don't even care about our pies. Such a good example. So we were like, we're never stepping outside of our comfort zone again, kind of thing.
Okay. Wow. That was such a fascinating story. I just love the way you told it. I feel like I was there with you, with your sister's mashed fingers and the scent of pie juice going everywhere. Anyway, I think that stories like that definitely goes to show the sorts of mistakes that you go through as you learn how to build a business. And I think when you start a business, you think you should just raise money fast and that will be able to solve your problems. But you learn so much without it. And how did you actually go around the issue of not being able to fund building the type of business that you wanted to be building?
At the time, we didn't have any money. And we didn't raise any money. I remember the first time we went to go meet a VC, they had invited us as Karmicans to go in and talk to them about raising money for expanding and scaling Karmicans, the food catering business. And this is way before Karma Kitchen. We didn't know anything about raising money. We didn't even know what VC stood for. And they said, oh, come in, have a chat. And we were like, okay, we'll come in and have a chat with you, thinking that they meant we'll come in and have a chat. So they invited us into the chat. We didn't know that a VC inviting you for a chat means that you have to bring a pitch deck and numbers and all the stuff. We just thought that they wanted to have a conversation with us. So we brought them some samples of our food and sat down around it. And, you know, they opened the samples and they're like, right, so you guys want to start? And I'm like, start what? You know, start what? You invited us. Don't you want to talk to us? And like, don't you have like a pitch deck or numbers or anything you can show us about your business? And we're like, well, we've brought you some food. Like, that's pretty much it.
What we
do. Like, you want some money. They were like, do you want money? We're like, yeah, we kind of thinking about maybe getting £10,000. That's how much money we needed to move into our kitchen out of the nightclub. So we were really keen to move out of the nightclub because it was just so dark in there and it was just not a great place to start a fresh, healthy salad company. It's a dark, sweaty basement frequently that smelled like alcohol and vomit. No offense to them because they were an amazing team, but that is what nightclubs smell like during the day. So we're desperate to get out and get our own space. And we thought, oh yeah, 10K will just about do it. And they were like, look, the legal fees are going to cost more than £10,000 for us to give you money. This is, you know, come back to us when you're ready. And we just walked, we literally skipped off down the street. We're like, what a lovely chat. When we were doing Karma Kitchen, we're raising Karma Kitchen, we went back and met them again. And they remembered us and they were like laughing about how unprepared we were compared to later. But yeah, we wanted to move into this kitchen and we're thinking, okay, we really need money. How are we going to do it? And then a publisher approached us and said, do you want to write a raw food cookbook for us? And we don't make raw food. We make just kind of healthy-ish food. Will you write a raw food cookbook? We'll give you £10,000 in an advance if you can write this book. And I just thought, yeah, what a great idea. That sounds so easy. We're going to get £10,000 at that point was like more money than either of us had ever had in our entire lives. So we were just like, yes, anything, we'll do it. We'll invent 100 raw food recipes and put them together into quite a complicated document and then shoot them and then basically publish them as a cookbook. And I remember going into the meeting with the editor like 8 months in And I just had a sketchbook with loads of pictures of vegetables and my ideas. So it's such a disaster. We were so disorganized at that time. I can't believe it. Anyway, we've really improved since then. So yeah, so basically used the advance, built the kitchen, traded favors, and finally moved out of that kitchen. But then, yeah, we had to publish the cookbook at the same time. And it was just so funny. It's still available. You know, it's 14p on Amazon. Raw is more.
Oh, wow.
Plug there. Raw is more. Yeah. Get it while stock's false, because it's definitely not going into a reprint. But yeah, it's so funny. To be honest, despite it being raw food and not getting maybe the traction that it deserved, it's actually a really good book. And the food photographer that worked on it with us is one of our really good friends. It was her first cookbook that she'd ever shot. And it was our first cookbook. I think probably our last cookbook after that experience. But it was our first cookbook. And I remember saying to her, we were talking about it when we did it, and she was at university, my sister, she's really good friends with her. She said at university, she's like, we'll know we've made it when you write your first cookbook and I photograph my first cookbook. And then we laughably sat in a room together and discussed that moment as we did exactly those things. We're like, we just have not made it yet, have we? Like, we're right at the beginning of this journey. This is certainly not the conclusion that we all shouldn't imagine. But yeah, it is true that so much stuff went wrong. We would get a client, we would lose a client, we would win a contract, and then, you know, things, we would do something wrong and then we would lose it. And there was no one step that made things easier. It was just every day things got a little bit better and better and better. And then we turned around 4 years later and we were literally making 1,000 meals a day, growing a revenue driven, completely self-owned company at like 36% a year growth. And you wouldn't have known it from the beginning, but we just suddenly started making food that was really consistent, and we got to grips with all the basics that were had eluded us.
Yeah, you do seem to be the perfect example of someone getting knocked over 7 times and just getting up 8. I'm having so much fun listening to you talk. I'm really happy. It seems like with all these disasters, you are learning from your mistakes, and I feel like I'm learning from your mistakes. And I mean, the Pi Day was unforgettable.
I mentioned Pi Day because there are people in the team now who were like there at Pi Day.
Yeah.
It's like D-Day. People were there for Pi Day and people just still like find that story so funny. There's another one. A few years ago at Karma Cans, we started getting really busy, like really, really busy. The run up to the pandemic, we were growing so fast. We got our first order, I remember, of 2,000. We had our first day of over 2,000 meals in a day. And that was a big day for us because it was basically like double what we were used to. It was a big conference, and I remember getting the van and we planned everything down to the minute. And the kitchen schedules were all written out. It was quite a while ago, I think maybe 2018, I think the first time this happened. After that, we started doing these kind of big days way more regularly and we were a lot more practiced for it. By that point, we were actually learning from our mistakes. It was quite good. And everything was planned down to literally the smallest details. It was like, get in at 7 o'clock, 7:10, put the water on. And all the chefs, there were coordinating meetings between the chefs and operations team and sales team and everyone to get this day right. We had this refrigerated van that we had hired specifically for this conference to get these meals there. We packed everything in. Everything was made. We were doing amazingly for time. And we looked around. We're like, yes, God, guys, we're crushing it. This is incredible. And then we went to put the stuff in the van. And I just looked at the van. I was like, oh my God, we've really let ourselves down here. And we just hadn't thought about how we're going to stack the food in the van. We didn't have enough boxes or crates or anything like that. We just didn't have enough stuff. So everything was in these wobbly boxes. And in the end, someone had to ride in the back of the van, in the refrigerated van, and hold everything in place. Basically, I looked inside the van. We hadn't planned for any boxes, like crates to put the food in. So there were all these wobbly boxes and we were packing these hot, like thousands of lunches into this van. And I just thought, God, we've really let ourselves down here, haven't we? I thought of everything except this bit. And of course, someone had to stand at the back of the van basically and hold all of the lunches in place as we traveled slowly at 5 miles an hour to destination. So silly. You can think of everything and then one small thing you forget. But yeah, that was such a good day. That was like the first day of 2000. That was incredible.
Wow. That's a big achievement. I'm enjoying getting an understanding of how you've got here, and that it wasn't just like, hey, we started delivering 2,000 businesses. And I think now makes sense to backtrack and understand why you wanted to start a business in the first place and put yourself through all of this torture.
My parents both worked for themselves. They both ran companies. That's how they met. They worked in neighboring factories in Bermondsey. And my mom ran a dry cleaning company for 25 years. And my dad ran an engineering factory that refitted soap and chocolate machinery, then resold it. Very, very, very sexy topics. They were both really big on education. They really wanted all of their kids to go to university and get a degree and all of that stuff. And then I remember like graduating and I said to my dad, like, oh, can you give me some help? I'm applying for some jobs and I'm thinking about applying for these ones. And I've got a couple of interviews lined up. Would you mind helping me prep? And he was like, wait, what? What do you mean you're applying for jobs? So he's like, what do you mean you're going to work for somebody else? So every time you want to go on holiday, you're going to have to ask somebody if you want to go on holiday. I was like, yeah, that's pretty much how employment works, Dad. He's like, but if you want to make more money, then you'll have to ask somebody and you have to wait for them to say yes before you can go and make more money. And I was just like, yes, you're literally describing a job. He was like, but why would you want to do that? Why would you go and work for somebody else when you could just work for yourself? Then you can do whatever you want. And I was like, it's quite a good point, actually. And then I've been working as a chef since I was 14 years old. That's when I got my first cooking job in a kitchen. And every weekend, all summer long, I took whatever job I could get. And after that, you know, when I was at my final year during my master's, I was at LSE. So I was in London and I was doing kind of packed lunches for myself every day. And then one of my friends, it really convoluted and quite dull story, but ended up making him lunches and selling them in his office. That's basically how KarmaCare started. My sister joined the company very shortly after she graduated. And we've been working together ever since that point. And one company led to the other company. But yeah, in terms of our like growing up together, as kids, we weren't even that close. We actually have became closer as we got older, me and my sister. And now, of course, we spend every single day working together, day in, day out, which is super nice.
Nice. That's really interesting. My parents are both entrepreneurial, but are definitely not pushing me to be entrepreneurial. They were like, Sam, you know, these things like jobs, like, they're pretty nice, you know, like maybe you could work for a big company. And I'm like, but I don't want to. I like having holiday when I want to and being able to just make money based on how good my skills are doing something.
Definitely what was funny is that for the first 5 years, we A, did not make any money and therefore did not take any holidays, which was an ironic twist of fate. So
yes. But I like the control and responsibility, where it's like the only person you can blame is yourself. Whereas, yeah, I don't like being at the mercy of someone else's point of view on things.
Yeah. And then you get investors and then you definitely...
Oh, yeah. Also, total fail.
Yeah. Something else. And running. A team that then also, you know, you're so responsible to them, you know, it's just, it can be a lot.
So we started with a pretty good quote on advertising entrepreneurship, but now we're like, basically, it's the worst.
No, I love it. I love it. I would never, you know, if I could work in this way for the rest of my life, I feel like...
As in no holidays, working all the time with lots of people. Depending
well, on. I think just it's every day feels good to come into work, to be able to choose the people that you work with and to be able to have complete freedom to try new things and experiment with different ideas and get funding for those ideas and really just like drive something forward, which is nothing, taking something from like literally nothing, just a flat idea, not even on a piece of paper, and then growing it into a massive company is just the best feeling. It feels so good. And again, when you're doing that with people that you just, you know, you can't get enough of them, you just spend time with people that make you feel happy. And they don't always make you feel happy every day, and not every single person is. And sometimes you don't make other people feel happy. But net, I just wouldn't change that. If I could do this forever, I would do it forever, again and again.
Okay, so I have two final questions. Firstly, what is one of your earliest ever vivid memories?
It's probably not the earliest memory I have, but it's one of the most vivid. When I was like 5 or 6, I started thinking about what infinity meant. I think it was after I learned what space was. Then I started thinking about how space was like infinite. And how my parents were going to die and then there would be nothing. And that thought like of infinity and space going on forever. So for 2 years, like, every night I thought about that religiously and thinking about how big it was and how you could never get your mind around it, how your mind was so small.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, just tears. Probably tears.
Wow.
so good about that.
I like this question because it's so random and no one really asks it. I'm just like a bit curious and a weirdo. Because some people have really interesting stories and some people just have really boring stories and some people just can't even remember anything at all. But I don't know what I'm going to get at all when I ask that question. That was definitely an answer that I wasn't expecting, but was really interesting. So definitely took me back. I remember kind of thinking if we could move at the speed of light and how big the universe is, like, you still wouldn't get anywhere and might be more annoying again to my grandparents and things. But no one's ever like made me think about that before during that question. I also love that the last answer you gave was literally, I love entrepreneurship. I would do this forever and ever.
If I could do this forever, I would do it forever, again and again.
And then this answer is, I am so terrified of the concept of forever. Amazing. Anyway, two final questions. The other one is, what's one of the kindest things someone has done for you?
I really just can't think of one single thing. I could just think of every single person that I know being really kind to me at the time. That is like my underlying experience of that. I just think of a whole bunch of people who I'm friends with, my family members, my sister. They're just so kind to me all the time. And sometimes I don't deserve it.
Yeah.
But they're kind. I think my sister's forgiven me for so many silly things. Like once I threw a can of chickpeas at her head because I was so angry with her while we were at work.
Like an unopened can or like...
Yes, an unopened can. No, an unopened heavy can. I threw at her head. It smashes the wall next to her. And she forgave me for that. So that was pretty kind.
You think she would have forgiven you if it had hit her head?
I hope so. I think we shouldn't go down this road too far. We still talk about that today as well. Just like Pi Day, that gets brought up a lot.
Yeah.
That gets brought up a lot. We used to fight more when we were working kind of more on the same thing. And now we very much have diverged. So we tend to like, we just trust each other to do the bits that we're responsible for now.
On the subject of early memories and hitting people, I accidentally, important, hit my mate's little brother with a sledgehammer on the head when I was like,
oh my God,
9. We were breaking apart a giant mound worth of like stuff that his dad had been excavating and stuff.
Yeah, it just sounds like a bad idea. I feel like you're not to blame. I think the adults should be responsible for that one. They should be the ones who don't get the forgiveness for that.
Yeah, true. Anyway, that's also a pretty vivid memory that I have. Thanks so much for joining. It's been great and you're welcome back.
Thanks very much for having me. Thanks very much for having me. It was great to meet you.
Well, that was an incredible story, and I was so happy to have this conversation with Eki. I feel like I learned so much. The actual conversation for the recording was 1.5 hours, and trust me, she will be back on the podcast.
Oh my God, no, I don't want to hear my voice for 2 hours.
She will be back on the podcast in later episodes to tell us about building teams that work and how she actually ended up raising her first £250 million from VCs. And then the later round.
Very, very, very sexy topics.
Exactly. There was just so many moments in this episode that I simply loved.
At one point, she was just standing over the sink, mashing potatoes, crying. And I think her knuckles were bleeding. And she was just like, this is the worst day of my life. £10,000 in an advance. Yes. Anything. We'll do it. We'll know we've made it when you write your first cookbook and I photograph my first cookbook. We just have not made it yet, have we? We're right at the beginning of this journey.
And whether you are at the beginning of your journey or you're lost in the trough of sadness, I hope that this episode gave you the motivation to carry on. I couldn't ask for a better set of stories to remind you that if you work hard through all the failures, you can do anything. Thank you so much for listening to the show. And thank yourself. Your consistency and persistency is where it's at.
Legend!
I truly hope you learned something today. And if you didn't, then I failed. But there's no failure if you learn from it. So help me out by connecting in the Podvine app where any feedback is genuinely appreciated.
Thanks.
You can also support me on Patreon for early access to full interviews. I am Sam Harris. And you? You are here to put a dent in the universe. So keep learning, keep growing, and until next time, stay curious. Curious.